Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, Zach Osmer here, IU Insider, Indianapolis Star. This is Mind Your Banners for Wednesday, March 8th, 2023. This is a, let's call it a fly-by-night Mind Your Banners. I'm in the car to Chicago later today. But before I hit the road, I'm hitting up an old friend, Chronic Hoosier. Chronic, welcome back to the podcast. Let's talk a little bit about the season that was and the season that that very much will be.
Technically, we're flying by day, just for the sake of truth.
Accuracy. That's true. In the Midwest, sometimes the storms can turn day into night pretty quickly around this time of year. So, Indiana finishes the regular season 21-10. Hoosiers are 12-8 in the Big Ten. They're the 3 seed in the Big Ten tournament. I don't want to get too hung up on, you know, everything about the end of the season or the season, the way it unfolded. But, you know, I think Indiana, by and large, had a pretty good year. I know they didn't win the league. They were picked to win the league, and they came up 3 games short of that. Number one, none of us saw Purdue being quite as good as Purdue was. Number two, Indiana had some injury issues. Number three, Indiana struggled sort of badly in the sort of early December to mid-January portion of the season that basically kind of set them behind the eight ball of really being able to compete for the Big Ten title. And it's also worth saying Indiana played one of the toughest schedules in the Big Ten. They didn't play any of the bottom five teams in the conference more than once. And I think they only played 2 of those 5 at home. I think of particular interest, we talked about Indiana's close to the season, both when the schedule came out and certainly as the schedule formed up. Indiana did not play a team currently ranked outside of the KenPom top 50 in its last 9 games. From the start of February on, Indiana played KenPom number 6, number 42, number 38, number 43, number 32, number 27, number 6, number 5, number 35, number 38. And I think a lot of us said before the season and even during the season, Indiana would need to really have a lot of its good work done by the end of January because that was going to be a rough close to the season. To its credit, Indiana went and goes 6-3 in those 9 games. That's a very strong close. They were 6-5 in the conference and 15-7 overall on February 1st, and they win 6 of their last 9. They do go 3-3 in their last 6, but I think just generally speaking, that, you know, basically sort of the beginning of February onward and how Indiana navigated it is a lot of what sort of turns this season to what it's become, I think, for Indiana.
I think you're exactly right. And, you know, I'm not trying to go full Bill Walton here on you this early in the morning, but man, what a long, strange trip this season's been. I mean, honestly, some really, you know, obviously with the preseason projections started off with the buzz that this team hasn't had around it in quite some time. And then December came and, you know, the bottom seemingly fell out. You talk about what they were able to put together in February. I go back to the middle of January, quite honestly, you know, coming off those 3 straight losses to Iowa, Northwestern, Penn State, just really putting themselves in a terrible position to start the Big Ten. And then they proceed to put on a run, the likes of which, you know, Indiana doesn't do that often. I mean, quite frankly, when to go 7-1 over an 8 game stretch is something that the Hoosiers haven't done since 16. I believe the 13 team did it a couple times. 0-2, and then you're going back to 93. I mean, it was an impressive run, but more than anything, it was the course correction that the Hoosiers made, starting with that Wisconsin game. And you know, I think it's testament to to the leadership that's emerged on this team. I mean, I think that was my biggest question at the start of the season. We knew this team was going to have some talent. We knew this team was going to be pretty dynamic. What we didn't know was who was going to lead it. And as you probably would have expected, Trace Jackson Davis just embraced that mantle and really carried it. But as leaders are wont to do, he brought some guys along with him. And I think the big thing for Indiana as it begins postseason play now is, you know, the recognition that as much as Trace has emerged and really become a stalwart for Indiana, even his off games, you're expecting 18-9 or, you know, something along those lines. Just how imperative it is, though, that other guys step up and answer the call with him. And, you know, we've seen what Indiana's capable of when it can add a third leg, certainly needs a second. But when it can add a third or a fourth, the Hoosiers can look awfully dangerous. On the flip side of that coin, I think the thing that's probably most concerning at the start of postseason play is just as quickly as they can get going, they can just give it all back again. And we kind of saw all that. And then some in the Michigan game. And I think, honestly, that's probably the quintessential ending to this season, to start off as strong as they did, to go in that massive lull in the middle of the game. I think it was like 45-10 or something along those lines, the run that Michigan put together, and then to claw their way back and to get it done in overtime on senior night. I just thought it was too poetic for what this team's been through this season, the journey it's been on. And, lo and behold, they find themselves pretty much where most people thought that the season should end, at least in the top three, competitive for the conference title. They were in it up until the last 2 weeks before mathematically eliminated effectively. But they're poised to make a run. Perhaps I think the bracket sets up great for them in the Big Ten tournament, and they should have a pretty favorable seed line heading into March Madness. And now it's just a matter of which Hoosiers show up for how many minutes in a game. And let's see where the chips fall from there.
Let's talk about Michigan briefly. I don't want to get too hung up on Michigan, but you're right about kind of the I don't know, what do you want to say, the pattern of that game. Indiana started well. More than that, I think Indiana forced Michigan to start poorly, to its credit. And then Michigan kind of pulled itself together. But I think what ultimately sort of crested at a 41-15 chunk into Indiana, and then Indiana kind of pulled together and fought back. And I think Indiana deserved credit for, kind of just sort of pulling that back, if you want to say, because it would have been very easy, I think, for Indiana to kind of chuck it in a little bit, given what had happened in the Iowa game, given the direction that things were moving. I do think, and I don't know if this is going to come off sort of overly homerish, I'm not sure. I think Indiana, and really anybody who's beaten Michigan in the last, month plus, deserves more credit than they're going to get for beating Michigan. Michigan right now is not in the NCAA tournament, and it's going to be hard for them to make the NCAA tournament. That is because of sins committed before Christmas. That is because they lost to Arizona State on a neutral floor. They lost to Virginia at home, Kentucky in London. They lost to North Carolina. There's that crippling loss to Central Michigan. They were 7-5 on January 1st, and they've gone 10-9 since then. But since the start of February, they're 6-4, and their four losses are by one at home to Indiana, by five at home on the road to Wisconsin, by four on the road in double overtime to Illinois, and by two on the road in overtime to Indiana. In that stretch, they've also pummeled Northwestern on the road, which is a game that means a lot. They've beaten Nebraska by 21 at home, which is more than some teams in the conference can say. They beat Michigan State, who's playing about as well as anybody in the Big Ten right now, by 12 at home. They beat Rutgers by 13 on the road, and they beat Wisconsin at home. If you sort Bart Torvik's, sort of T-rank national rankings to start at the beginning of February, Michigan is 16th in the country according to his formulas. And again, they're only 6-4 in that stretch. And, it's worth saying these things are imperfect. Indiana's 56th in the country in that stretch, despite being 6-3 and arguably having, better wins. So none of these metrics are perfect, but my point is Michigan has belatedly turned itself into the team we thought it could be in a lot of ways. And in a team that into a team that I think Indiana has the profile of which Indiana has really struggled with, which is basically a big that can kind of cancel out Trace Jackson Davis, and then multiple guard, athletic guard wing scorers that can basically muddle up your defensive coverages and make it so you can't just say, you know, Trace is going to own the post and here's our best defender on your best player, because they got, you know, somebody that can really sort of counterweight Trace in the post, and then multiple players that will stress your best defenders, you know, take you out of games when you have to go to your bench and things like that. Like I said, I'm not trying to make Michigan out to be a Final Four team. They are what they are. The record is what it is. Again, a lot of what they're going to pay for on Selection Sunday is probably going to be what happened between the beginning of the season and the turn of the year. But I actually think that Michigan is playing, if not as well as anybody in the Big Ten right now, certainly in probably the top three or four. And I think Indiana actually, I know Indiana fans see that as needing to scrape by an overtime to beat a bubble team. I actually think just on current form and current sort of construction, beating Michigan's a lot more difficult than Indiana's getting credit for.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. You know, Indiana has they have a number of flaws. They've got a lot of strengths. They've got a lot of weaknesses. And as you know, the Big Ten schedule has proven time and time again, it's perfectly capable of doing it. It exposes all of that. And, you know, you get into February and everybody is basically calling in their plays concurrently, because everybody knows what everybody's trying to run. It's pretty transparent at that point. You just have to go out there and do your stuff better than the other guys. And, you know, Indiana has struggled mightily at times this season, particularly on the defensive end, particularly in terms of keeping guys in front of them, particularly in guarding the 3-point line. And, you know, as you mentioned, teams that bring in a talented, capable big, maybe doesn't cancel Trace out, but at least occupies him and allows them to play Indiana a little more honest defensively, at times has proven challenging for the Hoosiers. And, you know, the Michigan game was all that and then some, wrapped up with a bow on top of it in 5 extra minutes, just to prove how ridiculous the game can be at times. And I think, you know, you almost miss the plot in the Michigan game without recognizing what preceded it to have, you know, arguably your best win in the Mike Woodson era at Mackey, followed by one of the ugliest losses in the Mike Woodson era, at least from an effort standpoint, from a focus standpoint, against Iowa. To parlay that into a senior night affair against a bubble team who's really fighting with everything they have. It was, like I said earlier, it was just too perfect. And it was fitting that Indiana was able to pull it out. And I think more than anything, it was fitting that, you know, they really had to rely on Race down the stretch, despite those missed free throws. Just an absolute will to win, particularly on the defensive end. And hold them over the finish line. So kudos to those guys for making that happen. But this is a team as well that I think last year you saw the desperation come through at the close of the season, and they were able to play their way into the final four, or the first four rather, and then basically just ran out of gas by the time they got to Portland. I think what you've seen in February is a team that still remembers those lessons, that's cognizant of what it takes. You know, obviously, so much of what they know it takes is still unknown to them because they haven't done it, you know, with the exception of putting together that run in the Big Ten tournament last year. March success has been something not often tasted in Indiana in a long time, and certainly the guys on this roster. So I think with as many upperclassmen as Mike Woodson is now relying on, plus with the addition of Hood Schifino, I think most of us are probably pretty comfortable assuming we don't see him again. And I don't want to, you know, sidetrack us on that whole conversation. But there's a high likelihood that Fino goes to the draft. But what that leaves you is a lot of guys who are staring the end of their college career squarely in the eye right now. And you know, when you have as many seniors, Trace, Race, Miller, Kopp, obviously X, taking the medical redshirt or going to apply for the medical redshirt. X has still been very, very vocal and very involved throughout this. So I don't think his presence has completely vacated the bench by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, I'd throw Trey Galloway in that lot as well as a junior who's really elevated his play and set the example. And I think because of that, it's enabled performances, kind of like what we saw in the second half from Tamar Bates, where guys recognizing this is it. It's now or never. You've got to show up because nothing else is guaranteed. Indiana's basically got two more games guaranteed left. And I expect them to show up in Chicago out of the gate, against whoever it may be, and play accordingly, because that's certainly what I feel like they've demonstrated as the season came to a close over the stretch of February.
Let's talk about kind of what's ahead of Indiana. They play Friday night against Maryland versus the winner of, and this is the peril of the double bye. Nebraska will play Minnesota tonight. I think we all expect Nebraska to win that game. Then the winner of that game will play Maryland tomorrow night. Indiana will play the winner of Maryland versus either Nebraska or Minnesota on Friday night. If they were to win that game, obviously the late games, no one ever thinks it's ideal, not least reporters. But if they were to win that game Friday night, the schedule would attenuate a little bit more comfortably in terms of once you get down to the Saturday games. I think the first Saturday game starts at 1 o'clock Eastern, and the second one is just like half an hour, 25 minutes, half an hour after this. So the point is, you know, the second one would be like 4:30 Eastern. You're not going to be having to stay up late to watch Indiana's. The advantage of the double bye, even in the late game, I guess what I'm trying to say is that Indiana is not going to be playing the late game two nights in a row, much less three nights in a row, which is what something like Nebraska might have to do if they beat Minnesota. Nebraska's on a bit of a heater. I think they've won like six of eight games or something like that. They went into Iowa and just, I mean, you know, you talk about the letdown for Indiana after the Purdue game, Iowa couldn't get a stop to save its life in that game. Nebraska's won four of its last seven, and has actually won seven of its last 11 as well. So, you know, if you're in a situation where, like, if you caught Nebraska, that'd be their third straight late game in as many days. If they were to beat whoever they play Friday night, they would get the winner of Northwestern versus either Penn State or Illinois in the semifinal. And then obviously that would be the entire bottom half of the Big Ten tournament bracket. We're not going to walk through the entire thing here. What I will say for Indiana, you talked about what was at stake for them last season. I don't know how much is at stake for them this weekend. And what I mean by that is I think there's a very real chance that by the time Indiana's on the floor for Friday night's game, certainly if they were to win Friday, by Saturday's game, I think the committee will have made up its mind largely where Indiana is seated. And if Indiana won the whole tournament, maybe they could bump themselves up a little bit. But if you look at the if you look at the chase group behind Indiana, St. Mary's is probably not going to move ahead of them now after last night's ugly loss to Gonzaga in the West Coast tournament final. It would probably be hard for Miami to jump them. It would certainly be hard for San Diego State to jump them. You know, TCU or Iowa State, maybe if they won the whole Big 12, but both of them can't win the Big 12. And then the flip side is you've also got the possibility that Indiana can, you know, sort of reposition itself positively next to a Tennessee, which has struggled a little bit lately and obviously has some injury issues, next to a Xavier, which Indiana, you know, argue. I've seen people with Xavier ahead of Indiana in their brackets. I don't totally understand that. Indiana was ahead of Xavier when the committee released its top 16 seeds. Since then, Indiana's gone 3-2, 2-2 in quad two with as good of a quad one win as anybody's going to have this year. Xavier's gone 4-1 with, I think, one quad two win at home, or maybe one quad one win, and then a loss to a team outside the field in Villanova. And Xavier's got an injury problem. Zach Fremantle's out for the year. My point is, you know, we learned this a little bit last year with Indiana, that we can sometimes tend to overstate the importance of the conference tournaments. I think the better way to think about it is, let's say Indiana won the whole thing. That's three games out of 34. That's still less than 9% of Indiana's total schedule. So if the committee is sitting there in the room and looking at it saying, well, you know, that's not even 10% of your full resume, what you did this weekend, we've got to take the whole thing into account. I think there's just a really good chance that Indiana is largely baked as a four. And then this weekend may be both what Indiana does and what other teams do about essentially where Indiana winds up in that hierarchy as a four. And that's something I'll talk about in a minute, because I think that's important as well. But I don't want to keep talking at you, Keenan.
No, I'm so used to this. That's just what you do best. No, I think Indiana is very much playing for its destination. How far are they going to have to travel right now? I think absent a run out and taking home the tournament title, Indiana's pretty much they've got to be locked at the four at this point, which is a good spot for them, quite honestly. I think no differently than I feel like they set up very nicely as a number three in the Big Ten tournament. Obviously you'd love to be a number one. You'd love to have a protected seed somewhere. But for Indiana and all its ups and downs this season, I think a four is probably as good as you could have hoped at any point. I think the importance of Chicago for this team is flushing the last, a couple of the down moments here in the last couple of weeks. Recognizing, when things start to get away from them, as we've seen this team can be prone to do, especially on the defensive side, then the offense seems to get a little clunky. They've got to find a way to stabilize, to level off, and stem that tide. And they need to do it quick, because you only get one crack from this point forward. So I think showing up in Chicago focused, showing up really engaged and connected on the defensive end, and just getting their heads right for what happens after they hear their name called next Sunday, I think is going to be paramount. And like you said, I don't know that there's really any massive stakes for the Hoosiers other than how far they're going to have to travel. What type of, you expect Indiana's going to have a lot of support no matter where they go. But the way that the regions are laid out, it certainly would be nice to stay a little bit closer, especially than going out on the West Coast time zone. All that said, though, too, one of the reasons Indiana finds themselves in the position they're in is injuries and finding a way to keep everybody healthy coming back from Chicago. I think more than anything else right now is going to be absolutely paramount for Indiana, especially when you look at some of these teams that they could be facing that are very much playing for their tournament lives, or at least from a selection standpoint. So you've got to watch it. Desperate teams can be dangerous. And, Indiana has shown one of their flaws is teams that want to get physical with them, especially with the backcourt. It just invites some danger. So they were going to have to be very, very careful, at least, in avoiding some of those things. Not that you really control a lot of that. But I think more than anything, that's probably the biggest risk the Hoosiers face with the Big Ten tournament starting here this week.
I think I think just a win Friday night, I think, would just kind of sort of solidify everything for Indiana. Again, if they won the whole thing, and especially if they did it the hard way, going back to that bracket, if they got Maryland on the Friday and then Illinois or Northwestern on the Saturday and then Purdue on the Sunday and they won the whole thing, then maybe the committee would say, okay, we're going to find our way to bumping you up to the three line. It is worth saying, though, if you look at where the brackets and I don't, we can disappear down the rabbit hole a little bit if we're not careful. Because I was doing a little bit of this last night and I looked up 20 minutes later and, it was near midnight and I had just lost all track of time. As a lot of people probably know, the Big Ten, or not the Big Ten, excuse me, the NCAA selection committee makes every effort to protect its top four seeds in the tournament geographically. The idea being, if you are a 1, 2, 3, or 4, the committee will do its utmost to put you in basically as close to home as possible for the first weekend and as close to home as possible for the second weekend. It's supposed to sort of incentivize being one of the top 16 teams in the field. Of course, that can get difficult as the field kind of unfolds, because once you get down to the four seeds, you've already had to, you know, do this sort of preferred placement for, you know, 11, 12 teams, you know, going through. And so you're sort of left with, well, what's the next best, you know, like, for example, Indiana fans, I think, have expressed to me, they'd love to see Indiana in Des Moines or Columbus. That's unlikely. And that's probably still would have been unlikely if they'd won the Iowa game, because Des Moines is going to fill up with Big 12 teams. You know, you've got Kansas, Kansas State, Baylor, yada, yada, yada. And because Des Moines is going to fill up with Big 12 teams, and because Purdue is obviously going to get first pick of Columbus in the first weekend, Marquette's going to get Columbus too. Marquette is almost guaranteed to stay ahead of Indiana. Again, I don't think the Iowa game really would have changed that. And so basically Columbus and Des Moines are going to fill up more quickly than Indiana can accommodate for, based on where they're going to wind up, even in an absolute best case scenario. And that's why you're seeing a lot of Indiana in Greensboro, in Orlando, and even some still in Albany, New York, because those are the next closest sites, essentially, in terms of when bracketologists lay out their projections, they try to send Indiana as a protected seed as close to home as possible.
Don't forget, Albany's Big Ten country now, so there's
that's
that.
True. There is another component to this, though, which is they do attempt to protect for the second weekend as well. And so the four regionals this year are Vegas for the West, Kansas City for the Midwest, New York for the East, and Louisville is the South. Everyone generally expects that Alabama is going to get Louisville, that if Alabama is the number one overall seed, they're going to get Louisville. If they're in the number two overall seed, it's probably going to be behind Kansas. Kansas will get Kansas City, and Alabama will take Louisville. If Indiana bumped up to a three, and this is all hypothetical, but if Indiana bumped up to a three, then it would probably be pretty hard to get into the track that gets you to Louisville, because somebody else will already have taken it. Marquette will already have taken it. Or you could wind up in a situation where Purdue gets knocked down to the two seed line. Purdue is the top two seed. They get into the Louisville regional, and the committee would not want to set up. The committee is, if it has to, it will set up Sweet 16 rematches. It prefers not to see rematches until the Elite Eight, especially between conference teams. So if Indiana were the three, they wouldn't want to put them next to Purdue as the two, because those two teams could meet in the Sweet 16. I think they'd have a little bit more truck with Purdue as a two in the same region with Indiana as a four, because the earliest those two teams could play, if all went according to Hoyle for both of them, was the Elite Eight. And by the national quarterfinal, the committee is usually a little bit more comfortable about this stuff. My point here is, if Indiana can find its way to positioning itself where it was when the committee released its full sort of early, you know, 16 seed bracket or 16 team sort of top four of the bracket about 2.5-3 weeks ago, and be the top four seed, Indiana would get first pick of Louisville. And if Purdue, in particular, if Purdue was, let's say, the last one seed and had to go to New York, there would be no obstacle to Indiana getting the number four seed in the South region. Wherever they play the first weekend, if they can get through it, then they'd be playing Alabama in the Sweet 16, probably, but they'd be doing it 2 hours from their home campus. So this is where, you know, this time of year, there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of, well, what about this? What if that? You know, from Indiana's perspective, it actually might be more advantageous to be a four than a three, as long as Indiana is, in particular, ahead of Xavier in the pecking order for the four, because obviously Xavier would geographically prefer Louisville as well.
Oh, sorry, I lost my mute button for a second there. And this is also the time of year where I have to interject. Louisville is not the South, but that's neither here nor there. It's really not. But the NCAA can continue to enable that myth. I think you're exactly right. No differently than I feel like Indiana being the three or the two for that matter. I like being opposite Purdue in the bracket, quite frankly, having beat them twice. I just think it sets up for, if we're going to have to do it a third time, let's do it for a title rather than, you know, a Friday or Saturday game. All that said, though, it's all academic at this point. I feel like I think this is what Indiana's playing for. I mean, quite honestly, this is what's at stake. This weekend is where you guys are going to be. And not only that, who you're going to have to match up against when you get there. Because I feel like Indiana's Achilles heel, you know, their Achilles heel right now is likely going to be matchup driven. You know, absent somebody getting hurt up in Chicago, I think Indiana would do well to put itself on the top half of the fours as opposed to the bottom half. You know, the committee loves to throw some little Easter eggs into the matchups, and I feel like this year's Indiana team is poised to be the recipient of one of those. And without getting into all those possible opportunities, I just think you take some of that out of the committee's hand. You handle your business, try to get at least two wins while you're up there, and really solidify yourself in that four grouping. Hopefully, in the top half of it. All that said, I do think for a team such as Indiana this year, I think it's imperative that you at least get a W up in Chicago. The way that this team swings, the way that it can slump, I think it would be bad juju for them to go up there and lay an egg on Friday night and come back home and have to stew on it and you know, resurfacing a lot of the doubts that they've unquestionably had to grapple with over the course of the season. You know, just as recently as the Iowa game for that matter. So short memories are certainly going to be at a premium here. But I do think it would be very, very good, not both from a seeding standpoint, but just also a mojo standpoint to stack up a couple more dubs before the dance really begins here and try to get some momentum. Because at the end of the day, as we've seen forever since the beginning of the tournament, it's not always the best team. It's just the one that's playing the best ball once the tournament starts. And I think as you're seeing a lot of the national pundits chiming in right now, Indiana's proving to be one of those sexy picks for a dark horse, because they clearly have the pieces. When they can get on the same page, when they can get clicking and rhythm together, Indiana can beat you in a number of different ways. But as I said earlier, I think it's going to have to start with defense for these guys because that generally spills over into the offensive side of the ball and really gets things humming for them. So this is a great opportunity for them to tune some of that up, to get connected, to get in rhythm, and hopefully to get on a roll and keep you on the road and away from your family and your home.
That's very kind. What a sentiment. I do broadly agree. I think Indiana would do itself a world of good just by winning Friday night. And mm-hmm. I think that would remove, because again, the other part of this too is, remember, and I know people don't like hearing this, but you know, they say, well, what's the point of conference tournaments? Well, number one, the point of conference tournaments is to put more games on TV. Number two, again, you can win, you know, Indiana could win every one of its games by 25 points this weekend. That is still 3 out of 34 games. The committee can't look at those three games and suddenly count them for 30% of Indiana's resume. It just can't work that way. That's not an equitable selection process. And there's also a factor of time. There are only so many hours in the day. These people need to sleep at least a little bit. They've got a lot of basketball to watch. They will have drawn out, or at least roughed out, a working bracket by Friday night. And they will leave some contingencies in there for bid thieves, for bubble teams that, you know, like Indiana did last year, pick up a couple late wins. But when we see sort of Indiana as the example here, Indiana, they got into the Big Ten tournament at, I think, 18-13. They won two games. That still only got them into the first four in Dayton. Part of the reason for that is because the committee looked at it and said, yes, but this is only, these two games are still just a small fraction of your overall resume. And they don't just, you don't get to wipe away a month or 2 months worth of basketball in 80 minutes. And we've got to be able to get this thing into a place where on, you know, in the last 3-4 hours before the selection show, they don't have to make wholesale changes. They don't have to say, well, we're going to flip them up two seed lines and slide everybody down. And a lot of what happens this time of year is people like you and me, because this is a really fun debate to have, and it's the exciting part of the season, and we're all talking about it, we all start talking ourselves in circles and talking ourselves into things.
Mm-hmm.
Committee can't really sort of be a slave to, because it is working on a time deadline. So the reality for Indiana too is, if not by the time that game Friday night tips off, certainly by the time it's over, the committee will probably have roughed out the top half of its bracket pretty comfortably, because a lot of the smaller conference tournaments will also be over. So you won't have a ton of, you know, bid thief possibilities left either. Indiana can still sort of wedge some movement in there, but probably not a ton. And on the other hand, as long as Indiana can find its way to winning one game in Chicago, there's not really any room for Indiana to drop. I think the floor is already pretty well hardened under them as a four.
Yeah.
I think that it would take something pretty ugly to drop them to a five, though a bad game Friday could maybe drop them far enough down the four line where they can't get into Louisville and they wind up in, you know, Kansas City, or they wind up in, you know, out west or something like that. I think a really impressive stay in Chicago could bump them up to the last three, but I think that's unlikely and possibly not really what Indiana would want anyway. You know, this team has done good work this year. I know it's been up and down at times, but this team has done good work across the breadth of this season, and that has put them in a place where I think the floor and the ceiling on their NCAA tournament position are pretty hardened now, and that's largely their credit. So we'll leave it there for now. He is Chronic Hoosier. I'm Zach Osterman. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been Mind Your Banners for the Indianapolis Star, for the Bloomington Herald Times. Thank you for listening, and we will be back.
Come on.
I'm not sure what's going on
here. Oh, baby, don't you wanna go?
That'd give you some Blues Brothers.
Sweet Home Chicago. Thank you for listening. If you've made it this far, you got that musical interlude. We claim no copyright to that, by the way. We will talk to you soon, presumably after the Big Ten tournament, though if Indiana goes crazy up in Chicago, maybe we'll cut a podcast while we're there. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Mind Your Banners for March 8th, 2023.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.